following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
FlyPod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover.
Today we have the New York Times bestselling author Karen White, and she has a brand new book. It's called Sea Change. Karen, welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
I hear this is a fantastic beach read.
Well, it depends on what you define beach read. I don't think it's light and fluffy, although it is. It does have a coastal setting, so it'll kind of get you in the mood for summer.
Ah, maybe that's where I come up with that. Of course, this does take place on the coast of Georgia.
It does, St. Simon's Island.
Mm-hmm. All right, so there is such a place as St. Simon's Island. I didn't look that up.
Yeah, it's a real place, and it has just an amazing history going back. You know, everybody's lived there, from, you know, Native Americans, the Spanish, the English, the Americans, and then it was contentious during the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, and the Civil War, and it's still there.
A great vacation spot, or is it just a spot maybe where the locals are?
Oh, no. It's definitely a lot of people from up north, tired of the winter, will retire there. There's it's now a big resort sort of golf course community, although if you go into the inner parts of the island, you'll see the old historical places.
Why the island?
I visited St. Simon's for the first time probably 15 years ago because I'd read Eugenia Price's St. Simon's trilogy. And she had created such a sense of place that I dragged my family for our first family vacation. My kids were babies at the time. And I remember falling in love with it. It's so atmospheric. Now, I grew up reading Gothics, Victoria Holt, and, of course, Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. And I remember the first time, I wasn't writing books at the time, but I remember remembering that feeling of the atmosphere there, like you were stepping back in time, you know, 200 years. It just had that almost a spooky, not in a bad spooky way, but just you feel the past around you, not in a haunting way, but in a very real present way, if that makes any sense. So I knew that one day when I started writing, I knew that one day I would have to find the right book for that setting, and it just kind of happened with Sea Change.
In Sea Change, we have a fantastic hook. We have a little girl, I believe, going out and picking up things from a tornado that happened mm-hmm. about 300 miles away.
Right. And that is based really, you know, I get these little nuggets, that I put in the stew pot of my subconscious when I'm not thinking about a book. And those are the things that I pull out when I'm ready to start the next book. And, about a year and a half ago, there were horrible tornadoes in, Tuscaloosa, Alabama. It was a horrible spring, across the country. And, there's a lot of loss of property and life. And I remember watching the news and they're interviewing a woman who lived 300 miles away in Georgia. And her quote was, "I was standing outside and other people's lives started falling into my yard." And I just thought, oh, that is great. And I threw that back into my stew pot. And of course, that's where that, you know, 300 miles away, Ava Whalen, finds a music box in the hedge outside her window and thus opens one of the many mysteries of the book.
You know, this year watching the weather and, like you mentioned, all the tornadoes this year, I didn't realize there was like a debris cloud that can be tracked. And what I didn't realize until reading Sea Change, that could be tossed 300 miles away. I just figured it went up
and then came down. Well, and I think that was because of the ferocity of this storm that it could toss debris 300 miles away. And that's why when they were interviewing this woman, because she'd created a Facebook page, where she was taking pictures of the things that she was finding and putting them up there, because even though they meant nothing to anybody else, she knew that to somebody who had lost their entire home, just finding a photograph or a blanket or a doll or something would mean the world. And that's when she was finding out where these things originated, and 300 miles away. I mean, it's incredible the strength of that storm.
Well, in sea change, we move on to a wedding. There's been a couple that get married, and they're leaving home for the coast.
Right. Well, the main character, Ava Whalen, she's been engaged to the same guy for 4 years and can't bring herself to really marry him. And she's away at a medical conference. She's a midwife. And she meets Matthew Fraser, who is from St. Simon's. His family has been on the island for over 200 years. And it's love at first sight, and she elopes with him, and he takes her back to St. Simon's. Of course, she forgets to tell him that she, since birth, has been deathly afraid of water, and no reason why, but is very afraid of it. And also, her husband has some secrets of his own.
And, of course, in Sea Change, we find out what those secrets are and if they're resolved. Why, you know, in marriage, I guess, there always maybe seems to be secrecy, and maybe it's not meant to be.
Right. I think in any relationship, there's always things about your spouse that you discover over time, perhaps not as big as some of the secrets that Matthew holds back from Ava. But I mean, that's why I write fiction. But again, going back to the whole, you know, Gothic, this is definitely a Southern Gothic theme where you don't always know who the bad guys are. But it also helped me, that whole theme helped me really, really delve into Ava's character, because she has such a sense of not forgiveness, but really faith, that her husband, she loves her husband, and he's telling her the truth, and she's going to find out why he is perhaps hiding a few things from her, because she thinks he's innocent of what people think he is guilty of, if that makes any sense. So and for her too, her relationship with her mother, that's another big theme. You know, we have the intergenerational, theme going on in the book, and her mother has her own secrets that she's been hiding from Ava. But Ava never gives up with either her husband or her mother, and knowing that there's an explanation, that their love for her is real, and that she will get to the bottom of it.
I think that's the fun thing in Sea Change. It's almost Ava knew from early on that there were secrets, and then she's finding things, and she's actually looking for secrets to kind of rest her soul in a sense, but it never does happen.
Oh, I think it, you don't think it happened at towards the end?
I'm not going to give anything away.
You know, this is one of those books it's really hard to talk about, because there are so many mystery elements and different plot lines, and they all lead to the other one, and you don't want to give too much away. But to me, I think she doesn't come across, and I guess it goes back to the title, you know, Sea Change is a complete abrupt about face way of thinking about things. And in the book, she discovers that she needs to look at things in a new way. And so does her husband. And I'm not, you know, I don't come out and say, yes, this is true, or no, this isn't true. I think it's just opening up your mind to possibilities, that everything can't always be explained. But what can be explained, what can always be understood, is, you know, the love for a man and a woman, and the love of a mother and her child. And I think that is the bottom truth of this story. And I think Ava proves it, you know, that there's some things that are constant that never change. And that's sort of what rests her soul, I guess, at the end of the book.
Well, you know, in Sea Change, we have a really cool Victorian house that Ava moves in to with Matthew. I mean, it's been in his family for just a long time. Can you describe that house for me? I thought you did a fantastic job.
Well, thank you. It's and actually, it's not Victorian. It was built, it was built, I guess, in the late 1700s. So whatever, post-revolutionary. St. Simon's used to be, you've heard of Sea Island Cotton, and that's where Sea Island Cotton came from. So there was maybe 8 huge, huge cotton plantations on the island, but there's also a few smaller farms, and this is one of the original farmhouses. None of the original plantation houses exist, but you can still find, you know, the old Fort Frederica that was built by the Spanish, and the old church, Christchurch Cemetery is still there. So there's little pockets of history, and the house is actually made up. It doesn't exist on St. Simon's. It actually exists a little further away, but I needed it for the book's purposes to be on St. Simon's. And it's a tabby farmhouse. Now, tabby is it's a building material made of crushed oyster shells and sand and mud and things like that that you find on the coast. It's very, very strong. It can withstand, you know, once it dries, it withstands, you know, hurricane force winds. And it's very long, long living. And it's very, you see it a lot on the coast. You can see the shells, you know, in the cement sort of, structure. So it's very recognizable, but it's got the original heart pine floors, which to me, I'm a card carrying member of the National Trust. I love old buildings. I love the way that buildings are kind of a vessel of time travel. You walk on the same wood floors that people, and in this case, Matthew's ancestors walked on over 200 years before. And I know I always feel a connection to the past when I'm in an old house. And Ava certainly does when she walks into this house. And it's almost like she hears the whispering of the people who've lived there before. And in more ways than one, without giving anything away.
All right. So Sea Change, is this book different than other books you've written? And how many books have you written?
This is actually my 15th novel, really 15th and a half, because my third book, when it went out, it was printed with another publisher, and when it went out of print, I got the rights back and rewrote it and sold it to my current publisher, and that was Falling Home, and it came out in 2010. So I rewrote it, so that's only half a book. So this is really 15 and a half. But it's a little different. It's still very much a Karen White book in terms of my protagonist, are always Southern. That's what I know. Either Southern by birth or Southern by transplant. And they're always in a deep hole of their own making, either from circumstances or they've dug it themselves and they have no way of knowing how to get out of the hole, or, and they don't believe they've got what it takes inside to crawl out of the hole. I always have an element of mysteries in my book. I always have, you know, an old house or old building or something as a main character in the book. And there's always sort of a love story in the book. And in this case, there's just a little more mystery. There's more mystery elements. I always also have an element of history. And in here, we really go back in time, you know, to the War of 1812. And we have two parallel stories, which I've done before, but not so much as how they were related in this book. So, and you actually have two love stories. We have, you know, Jeffrey and Pamela in the 19th century. And then the paralleled with Matthew and Ava, modern day. And I loved tying their stories together because in the beginning, I know readers are like, okay, why are we in Matthew and Jeffrey and Pamela's lives? You know, what have they got to do with Ava and Matthew? And of course, as you read on, you find out.
Karen, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about these different stories in here and how you do intertwine those. What is the challenge of that? I mean, it seems like one story would be tough, but to have two and make everything in a nice little bow at the end.
Right. You know, and it's I started doing that with On Folly Beach, which came out in 2010, because that story that I wanted to tell, there was no way I could tell that story without actually putting the reader in 1940 and 1941. I wasn't sure how my readers would take it, and they loved it. They loved going back in time. And truthfully, as an author, not that I ever get bored with my characters, but sometimes I need a little mental stimulation in between. And it was great to, you know, okay, so I'm writing Matthew and Pamela, and it's like, okay, I need to go back in time now. And so it was kind of like, it's like writing two different books almost. And I write them, you know, in the order in which you read it. I don't write the modern story and then go back and write the old story because I don't want to know ahead of time what my readers don't know. I want to be discovering along with my readers. It is a challenge, but it's a lot more fun to write it that way. I really enjoy doing it. So I've done it in, this is the third book, and I'll probably do it again. The book I'm writing on right now is not, but I love the going back in time, and people seem to enjoy it, so I'll continue to do it.
Does that take maybe more of an experienced writer to do that? I mean, probably when you were first starting out, you really didn't do that?
And that could be it, because when you're first starting out, you're so careful not to make any mistakes. And this was a bit of a leap for me. But again, I think, like I said, with Folly Beach, that was my, 12th book? I've lost count. But I'd learned to trust myself at that point, and that's how the story was coming to me. And I figured that, you know, after however many books, it was time that I, you know, could step out of my box a little bit. And like I said, it was successful. And so I've done it a few more times since.
Karen, of course, you've got Sea Change out right now. You were talking about writing half of a book by getting the rights back from this book that you had.
Right.
What was the challenge with that? Going back to that book and picking up and pretty much rewriting it in a sense.
Well, it was funny because I wrote the book Falling Home 10 years ago. 10 years, I'm so happy to say my writing has improved. So it was such a joy to be able to go, oh, thank goodness. You know, it's out of print. Nobody's going to see that, you know, and I can redo it. Because my love for a book is always the story and the characters, and that did not change. The things that needed to change were some of the long-windedness of it. I wrote it 10 years ago. It was like the third book I'd ever written. And the other thing that was really funny is technology. In that book, I had people listening to Walkmans and using landlines. Nobody had a cell phone, you know, and I think somebody had a pager at one point, you know, and because it's amazing how technology changes. And so I really needed to make it current and up to date and all of that. And it just turned out to be much better. And I'm just so glad because I love the book and the story and the characters, and my readers have too. And I was just so glad that I was able to sort of repackage it. And I added some points of view to make it a little bit of richer reading experience, and I know my new readers have really enjoyed that. And then the sequel, I've done the same thing. The rights reverted back to me. I've just rewritten it, and it will be out in January.
Wow. Well, Sea Change, of course, you go back in time. It's also a contemporary piece.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at things at the turn of the century, if you will, that's kind of got to be tough. Do you do some reading on something like that?
Or? Oh, absolutely. I have to do research for that. But it's a good thing that I'm a huge history buff. There's nothing I love more than doing research. And I research while I'm writing. I found that if I research before I write, I spend months and months and months of reading stuff that I will never use. So I always start with the character and her internal conflict, and I start writing the story. And then when I find, oh, I need to know more about this, then I just put some asterisks in there, and then I keep going. So then I know I have a specific thing I need to be looking for in my research. I was one of those kids in high school. Remember encyclopedias? You know, if I had to look something up, you know, 6 hours later, I would have read the entire book. So I've got to be, you know, time is so precious to me right now. So I have to be very, very jealous and guard my time, and that includes research. No matter how much I want to read everything there is to know about 19th century midwifery, you know, it just didn't work. So, but I love that, you know, and I do research while I'm writing.
I think, don't most authors, maybe, you know, I'm just throwing something out here, but don't most authors research first before they write? I don't know if that's common
knowledge. A lot of the ones that I know, especially those historical authors, do. But they're not also writing two books a year like I am. So, like I said, time is really precious to me. If I had a year to write a book, I would be more than happy to spend 3 months just reading history stuff. Unfortunately, I don't. That doesn't mean sometimes I will sort of indulge. And if I'm really into a book, you know, if I'm only reading a chapter about something I need, I might go back during my pleasure reading moments and read from, you know, the beginning other stuff that I might not need.
So, New York Times bestselling author, why two books a year? It seems like I might want to just kind of kick back, especially go to an island.
Well, what's happened is that I wasn't a New York Times bestselling author when I first started doing the two books a year. And the two books a year came out, it wasn't intentional. I was happy doing, this is what I call my grit lit Southern women's fiction books. I was doing one a year, and that was building my audience. My publisher was very happy with me. And then literally, you know, washing my hair one day, a character smacked me up over the head, and her name was Melanie Middleton. She's a realtor in Charleston, and she sees dead people. And I thought, well, where is this coming from? And I kind of sat down and I wrote down some chapters, and I was like, this could be a book series. I really, really like this. And I sent it to my agent. She's like, I love this. Let me send it to your publisher. My editor loved this, but it wasn't exactly like the other books that I'd been doing. And my readers were looking forward to that Southern Grit Lit book every spring, and they were afraid if they put this sort of what I call my Sixth Sense meets National Treasure meets Moonlighting books, you know, in the spring slot, we were afraid that we would lose some readers. So they said, well, it's like a kid going into a candy store. You know, they said, so Karen, could you do these books in the fall and your other books in the spring? And again, like a kid in the candy store, yes, you know, the more the better, you know, not realizing that, you know, I'd be sick to my stomach after all that candy. But it's all been good because our biggest hope was that I'd have a crossover audience. And my Charleston, South Carolina series is, you know, the people that start with that love them, and they go and read my Grit Lit books and vice versa. So it's been wonderful. So the third book in the Trad Street series just came out in November, and the fourth and last book will come out next January, and that will be the end of my two books a year. thing because it's killing me.
So what are your readers saying about this? Because I'm sure they know the series is going to end, and it's
you know what,
near.
And maybe I'm not being honest with them. They always want to know when the next book is coming out, and I just say the fourth book will be out in January 2014 because I can't stand to hear the groans of disappointment because people are really, really involved in these characters. And I love them too, but I want to leave on a high note. You know, I don't want to, you know, beat them to death. So, who knows though, there could be a spinoff. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Well, Sea Change, your brand new book, of course, doing two books a year, which just seems like you've got to be busy, busy, busy writing. What's the day in the life of Karen White like? I mean, do you get up and then you go right to the keyboard and you don't stop till dark?
You know, I'm not one of those people that can sit and write all day long. I write in maybe hour and a half spurts. Although my life is changing drastically, as of next week, I will be an empty nester with my youngest going to college. You know, even in high school, I still got up with him and, you know, he was driving himself, but I, you know, that was our time together. And now I can, get up first thing, of course, take care of the dog because he's very demanding. And then just sit and write and kind of make my own schedule for the first time in my life. My earlier books honestly were written in my car, on my laptop at, you know, the football field or the horse riding rink or, you know, wherever my kids were doing their thing. So this is going to be, you know, really special, being able to carve my own schedule, and maybe write. I know. So now I'm going to one book a year now when I have more time. But I think there's a saying, and I can't quote it correctly, but like when you get a new closet, you know, you want to fill it. The more space you have, the more stuff that you fill it with. And I think the same is with time. You know, you'll squander. You know, that the more time you have, the more time you squander. So I'm going to try to be very, very careful not to do that. But yeah, having a quiet house and a clean house for long periods of time will be such a change.
So you started writing when your son was just a wee lad?
He was, I guess my kids were 2 and 4. It was the summer of the Olympics in Atlanta, 1996. I don't know. I'd always been encouraged to write. I never thought that I would. I was a business major and I was a stay-at-home mom at that time. And I literally sat down one day during that summer and started writing. I never thought, A, that I would finish the book, or B, publish a book, publish two books, make the New York Times. It's just been, and don't tell my children this, but when I first started out, I really didn't set any goals. It was just a hobby. And I entered that first book into a writing contest, and the finalist judge was a New York literary agent who'd once been Nora Roberts' editor, and she offered to represent me, and she's still my agent. So it was just kind of something I fell into without any planning or goal. And even after, you know, the second book, third book, fourth book, and then I was with Penguin since 2005, it just never occurred to me that, you know, it's really been, I write the best book that I can, and then I see what happens. You know, because you can't, like, say, okay, I'm going to be on the New York Times with this book. That's not my goal. My goal is to write the absolute best book that I can that I would enjoy reading, because I think my readers are very much like me in terms of what they like to read, and that's my goal.
All right, so Sea Change, your brand new book. Let's talk a little bit about a website where I might be able to find out just exactly how many books you have and maybe the titles and maybe even be able to read a little bit.
Absolutely. And that would be karen-white.com. And that's my website. And on there, there's also links to, you know, I have a very active fan page, Facebook fan page, and a blog, and there's also book trailers for my books, and pretty much everything you want to know about me and my books is on my website and where I'll be.
Okay, cool. Yeah, you'll want that. Be great to meet the author of some of your favorite books out there. Trailers, book trailers, something new? I mean, how long has that been going on?
You know, for a few years, I never wanted to get into it. Same reason why I would never self-publish a book, because I'm a writer. I'm not a movie producer. I'm not a book cover designer. I want to write the book. So I never thought that I would do a book trailer, and it was my publisher, Penguin Publishing Group, who said, Karen, we want to send you to St. Simon's, or actually the first one was last year, the Gulf Coast for the Beech Trees, which is set in Biloxi, New Orleans. And they said, we want to send you down there and just interview you at some of the settings, for some of the scenes in the book. And I thought, okay, you know, you're going to pay for it. Great. But it's been amazing. The people that they've hired to do them are, I mean, they're professionals. That's what they do. And I think that was why I would never have done it on my own, because if it's not done professionally, it, you know, it's like those self-made commercials that you see on TV. You're like, oh, you know, I wanted a real quality product, and they did. They've done a great job. And it really adds to your reading experience, I think, especially if you go in for the one for Sea Change. You know, I'm in the cemetery at Christ Church where there's a lot of major scenes that happen in the book, and it really gives you that atmosphere that, that I was trying to create in the book, and kind of gives you a visual for it.
Biloxi, of course, devastated years ago by a huge, huge hurricane. What's that like now? Is that coming back?
It is, and it's just very different. My father grew up in Biloxi, and it's just very different now. They've got the casinos now, which is great because they need the income. But a lot of the beautiful, beautiful old houses on Beach Boulevard and all those gorgeous 300-year-old oak trees, they're all gone. So it's definitely changed. But the people are pulling through, and they're strong, and they're surviving, and they're, you know, prospering now. Again, thanks to the casinos, which is sort of a, you know, I'm on the fence about it. You know, it's good they bring in the revenue, but it's also, it's not the Biloxi of when I was growing up and visiting my father's family.
Well, the brand new book is Sea Change by Karen White. And I tell you what, this thing is just full of secrets. Did we mention that Matthew was married before? And Ava, she kind of feels like maybe she's just not as good as what Matthew's first wife was like. And, oh, did you know there's a painting by the door? Ah, and she finds something in it, Ava does. I wonder what that could be. Sea Change. I tell you what, it's a fantastic read and full of surprises by Karen White. Karen, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Karen White, author of her brand new book, Sea Change. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.